So, and now we're going to be talking very shortly with a Burundian American and Mr. Tazira about this situation in Burundi. A similar story. I mean, this is a Taylor report, CIT 89.5 FM. Write to us at taylor@ciat.fm. We're on the web, taylor-report.com, Facebook/The Taylor Report. And I can tell you that these issues we're talking about today is because here we are Monday afternoon, 5 o'clock. We're talking about something that you're not being told about in the what they call the MSM, and smiley face, MSM. And they simply don't want us to know the things we need to know. And so we like to talk to commentators or analysts, but it's also fun to talk to reporters, somebody who can just tell us the basic information we need, because the basic information you need is not provided. And I'm particularly unhappy with the situation that is developing in Burundi, because it very much resembles what happened in Rwanda. And the misreporting of the Rwanda story led to disaster. And we're joined now by Mr. Tazira. Are you there, sir? Hello?
Hello.
Oh, there he is. Bingo. Well, thanks for joining us. You're, of course, a Burundian American, and you have watched developments in your country and lived through them. And we're reading about a violent event that happened over the weekend, I believe, where three military posts were attacked, and there was a considerable loss of life, and it has led to a lot of bizarre speculation in Washington and Ottawa and other places that are not Burundi about what needs to be done for your country. I'll come to that, but I want to ask you, you have a president, Mr. Nkurunziza, who led a popular struggle and then became president. Could you tell us his history and give us an idea of the degree of popularity he support he has, and where that support is, and who the people are who've been opposing him? Could you give us that kind of background?
Yes, I guess his introduction, Pierre Nkurunziza, the president, mm-hmm. his introduction into the politics of Burundi came after 1993, when the first elected president mm-hmm. Was murdered by the military. Mm-hmm. So it before the issue was ethnic, because in the government used to be a Tutsi government, mm-hmm. Full Tutsi military, and you had the Hutu populace. Hutus are 85%, Tutsis are 14%. Mm-hmm. And so in 1993, through elections, the first time ever, a Hutu was in power. But 3 months later, the military, the Tutsi military, killed the president, mm-hmm. which began the long war of 15 years. Mm-hmm. And that is when Pierre Nkurunziza was a professor at the University of Burundi. When he got a tip that they were coming to kill him, he went and joined the rebellion, fighting against the government of Burundi.
One question is, his father was prominent in politics and was killed some many years ago. Is that true?
All right. So in 1972, and your government in Canada recognizes that, there was a genocide in Burundi against the Hutus. Mm-hmm. In 1972, I lost 7 uncles in 1 week during that genocide. Mm-hmm. So, Pierre Nkurunziza, the president, he lost his father, who was a governor during that time. And to make matters interesting, he was raised by his Tutsi mother. Mm-hmm. He is actually both Hutu and Tutsi. And his mother is still well alive, mm-hmm. and she's always on television. But
really? I mean, she's an active person.
Yeah, she's very active. She's always on TV.
She supports her son. She likes her son.
She likes her son. I mean, it's not a hidden secret or a rumor. Mm-hmm. You know, he is half Hutu, half Tutsi. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. sorry? And so after, when he went into the bush, he joined the rebels, which the movement is called the CNDD-FDD, which means the Council of Defense of Democracy. And their goal was to restore the lost democracy that had been robbed from the Burundi people.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to go into details very much about the party itself, but I can tell you the party evolved. It evolved at first against being against Tutsis. It was very harsh. But in the mid-90s, they found out that there were many Tutsis who were also not happy. They weren't taking advantage of the politics of Burundi. And so the movement changed and became a movement against bad leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2000, the famous Arusha Accords were signed.
Uh-huh. Yes, by the way, I should just say for our listeners, the Arusha Accord, that makes an echo because there was an Arusha Accord for Rwanda in 1993-94, which
correct.
Ended rather unhappily. But Burundi actually had an Arusha process that ended happily in that they did go through it without a coup, and then you had ended up with elections and Mr. Nkurunziza, right?
Well, even the Arusha Accord is controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Because the CNDD-FDD, the Strong Rebellion, did not sign them. They did not agree with the Arusha Accords, because the Arusha Accords only talk about ethnic issues. They don't talk about bad governance, which CNDD-FDD was fighting mostly against.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2000, they signed the last Arusha Accord. They had signed multiple ones before, but this was the last one, and it was signed by 7 Hutu parties and 10 Tutsi parties. Mm-hmm. But those are really small parties.
Mm-hmm.
The real fight was between the military and the CNDD-FDD, and to a lesser extent, the FNL, which is Agathon Rwasa.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people say that Arusha Accords stopped the war in Burundi. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because had the Arusha Accords stopped the war, why would this sign in 2003 the Pretoria ceasefire agreement mm-hmm. between the CNDD-FDD and the army?
Uh-huh.
And that
well,
when,
and
when
by the way, just
the war stopped.
Yeah, Mr. Nkurunziza's party and the army, basically. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was the real battle of them, not the politicians who were signing the Arusha Accords.
Mm-hmm.
The same day today, quite clearly, even seeing the election results where they took just about everything,
mm-hmm.
they were the real struggle.
Yeah,
and they had the real rebellion, and that is why the Pretoria ceasefire agreement is very crucial to the discussion, because even in the Constitution, wherever Arusha is mentioned, next to it is mentioned the Pretoria peace agreement, ceasefire agreement that CNDD-FDD signed. They never signed the Arusha Accords.
Uh-huh. Now, what kind of president has Mr. Nkurunziza been? He's been in office a number of years. What has his? What would you say, since he has won two elections, and by the way, there's no disputing that he did win those elections. Give me an idea of how popular you think he is, and then why. What is it, that he's done that has maintained the loyalty and support of the broad population?
Okay, I will start off by giving out the last Gallup. This is not some African poll. This is the Gallup poll.
A Gallup.
They went to different countries. Yeah, in 2013. And the title, Pierre Nkurunziza is the most popular president in Africa, as in per country. He enjoyed 89% support,
mm-hmm.
according to the Gallup poll, 2013. That's just 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and why is that? What's he? How do the people view him? What do they think he represents? If he's got this strong support, what is he to the people?
Before him, all the presidents were ruthless military who only helped develop Bujumbura, the capital.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Burundi is 93% rural. Burundi is very rural, and people there live in dire poverty, and they live as second-class citizens. Pierre Nkurunziza comes from that fabric. And so he is not military. Every weekend, he does community works. He's out building schools, planting vegetables with the population every weekend. And what he did also was his policies actually helped the poor more than they helped Bujumbura, meaning he introduced free healthcare. Burundi has free healthcare for women who are pregnant.
Free healthcare, and yes.
Free healthcare, yeah, if you're pregnant until you have a child and until the child has 5 years old. Burundi, poor Burundi, has free healthcare for the poor, all that population. Burundi has free healthcare for the 20% poorest of the poorest of the country. They get also a healthcare card. They get free healthcare. This is unheard of before. He built over 5,000 schools without a drop of aid. Burundi, I believe, before had about 1,000 schools, but under him, they built 5,000 schools in less than 10 years.
And most of those, of course, are not in in Bujumbura, which everybody, all the reporters go to Bujumbura and then they go home. They don't go to the countryside.
They don't go to the countryside.
Yes.
And that's why even during the protest, there was never a protest of country. Everything was the same neighborhood in Bujumbura where there's opposition members. But for the population in up country, he has built all the schools. He has built so many clinics and hospitals. Mm-hmm. All that without aid money is through the community works that are that he does every single weekend.
Mm-hmm. Now, and what are the relations with other countries like with Burundi? Because I read the papers here, the U.S. Ambassador is the most important person in the world to tell us about Burundi, but I never hear about any African countries really discussing the government of Mr. Nkurunziza or Burundi itself. But how are their relations with other countries?
I would say they're excellent with the neighboring countries, especially. If you follow the Security Council meeting, if you follow the recent Pan-African meeting with the EU, there's a sharp difference between the Western countries and African nations. The African nations have defended Burundi incredibly because they understand the truth. Mm-hmm. Tanzania is a very good neighbor. Angola has defended Burundi in the Security Council so many times, very well. I mean, South Africa are very good friends. The Congo are good neighbors, you know, because Congo and Tanzania are not good friends of Rwanda at all. Uh-huh. But Burundi is on their side. So there's an interesting close axis over there that Nkurunziza enjoys as far as friends in Africa.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Mr. Tazira. He is a Burundian-American and has considerable experience, obviously, and we need to have this clearer picture of the context of such an episode as just happened there. I was leading at the lead. I mentioned, of course, that there were attack on these three posts. Is there an identification yet of who these armed elements? They look like terrorists. I mean, certainly, I haven't heard any political labels. They just seem to be somebody with uniforms and a lot of expensive weapons making attacks on your government. Can you tell us who they are?
Yes, they're terrorists, of course. I mean, if anybody in France or the U.S. Attacked military camps, the response would be quite heavy.
It certainly was here. We had one soldier was shot, and we have a bunch of new laws.
Exactly. But you have some people, like someone in power, defending those people attacking the military camps, which is sad.
Well, I have to say, the External Affairs Minister of Canada today immediately started talking about repression. But you know, in France, there was a terrorist act, and people said, "Well, we better do something about those terrorists." So why isn't it okay for your government or the Burundian government, I should call it, to do the same?
And that's a very big double standard. I mean, there's an opposition that's armed, and it's mostly a lot of them were part of the failed coup d'etat, May 13th.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who were protesting are the same people in the same neighborhood who have been armed by the same leaders who were pushing them to violently protest.
Yeah,
the government of Burundi has been telling people for so long, these are not normal protests. How can they protest and police are dying? This is not normal. And nobody believes them, listen to them. And now it's everything is quite visible. They killed, I mean, four policemen and four military during their attack this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just respond to them by giving them flowers.
Why do you think the United States government and the Canadian government and Human Rights Watch and Ban Ki-moon want someone to come and oversee your government, to come and help you out by being present?
First of all, the military presence that the U.S. is seeking, we all know the end of the peacekeepers. It's usually a way to enter your country and topple a leader. We saw that in Ivory Coast with Gbagbo. We saw that in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in pretend peacekeepers who eventually are there to take out a leader. The U.S., under Samantha Power and Susan Rice, are very, very dangerous for our region. You know, Samantha Power herself, she co-founded the radio station.
A radio station in Burundi.
Yeah, where the coup d'etat was announced.
Well, you know, by the way, the Canadian government, if she tried to do that here, it wouldn't be allowed.
Oh, but, yeah,
would not be allowed.
But
even if she's Samantha Powers and a personal friend of the president.
Exactly. And she has that interest because her guy, his name is Alexis Nduhije, who the UN already said he was a warlord. The UN announced about in 2012 saying he was a warlord in the Eastern DRC, is the co-founder with her.
Yes.
And it looks like she wants him and his violent group to be part of the government, to exert some influence somewhat.
Yeah.
So she's very deeply invested in this, and I think she's probably the main influence on the government to side against Nkurunziza's government.
Well, Mr. Tazira, I'm really grateful that you helped us out. We're going to need a lot more help because there's going to be a trial now for some of those people from the coup attempt, and the plotters are not going to give up, and there are games against your country. But you've been very helpful. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
Okay. And that's Mr. Tazira, and he is a Burundian-American. He knows of what he speaks, I think. Is that a good of which he speaks? And a little detail I want to throw in there is that I noticed Ban Ki-moon is saying, well, you know, we ought to intervene there, and the UN should have a presence and on all this. But Ban Ki-moon would talk like that. He's from an occupied country. He's from South Korea, where the American army never went home. There are 40,000 American troops in his country. He thinks that's fine. And he's one of their favorite guys. And, of course, as we've been told by Stephen Gowans, who's going to join us shortly, the commander-in-chief of the South Korean Army is the United States General. He's the commander, legally, officially, kids, if you didn't know that. And so he's this man from an occupied country is everybody's favorite UN guy. He's the one that they used to help them knock out previous UN representatives that the U.S. did not like. But this is a kind of a cabal, if I can put that kind of term